Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we're back with another PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos. Inside sports, fantasy football, the Lakers fast break. Truly appreciate you joining us. If you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts, you need to go ahead, if you can, and if you please, give us that 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, follow, subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest Pop Culture Cosmos, State of Pro Wrestling, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, PCC Multiverse, and everything that we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos or a PCC Multiverse without my good friend, and she is back for more with her prognostications. She's getting all together the concentration. We were just talking before the show about how the Oscars may not spread the love this year. It is my good friend indeed. You got to go ahead and check out what she's doing today right here for you at Vampires and Vitae, Wild Beyond the Withershy, all the things that she's doing. She is going to make sure that she tells you what she's doing and where she's at in the world of the RPG. It is, of course, my good friend, Melinda Barkhouse-Ross. And Melinda, great to have you back on the show. Hopefully you did not witness the embarrassment of pro wrestling that John Orlando from the PVD cast and I did last week in regards to the promo that we cut, which was absolutely fun to do, but I know it's gone viral for many wrong reasons. Great to have you back, my friend, talking a lot of good entertainment and pop culture today.
Did I see a tattoo on your arm?
I do. Yes. Yes.
Is that new?
About a month old. Yes. Just the Avengers thing. And
what?
And I got a Lakers logo here. Yeah. Just a little bit.
No, I mean, I am heavily tattooed. So I
got this one here. Up here, that's the major one I got right here. Yeah. For my daughters. So yeah.
I had no idea you had tattoos.
Yes, absolutely. That's, what can I say? I hide these little things. I know the one on my arm was going to get noticed as soon as I put it there. But yeah, I just thought I'd, you know, I know the old thing where all the members outside of Mark Ruffalo, the original members of the Avengers, did the Avengers logo. And of course, my love for pop culture. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go ahead and show my love for it, and probably it was the best way to do that, because my girls, the Nick Schneid, and in other words, they say no way to the Pop Culture Cosmos logo guy. Yeah, Dad, that's just clip art you found on the internet one day a long time ago. Don't
honestly,
put him on
no.
your shoulder.
You know, you could start a trend just getting clip art tattooed. You could be the originator of a pop culture trend, Gerald.
Yeah, I see. That's true.
Yeah. But it's all in how you sell it to them.
This is true. This is true. But they like the stuff I have now, and so do I. I'll just maybe extend that one day. But I don't know. It is a very painful experience doing the big, large one. Yes.
Yeah, I have a whole back piece and my ribs are done as well. So I know all about that. It can be rough, but some Gatorade and you'll get through it.
Koopa DeGen, aka Jamie Monroy, our good friend here at the show, who we need to get back on. Yeah, he did text me this week. I'm so appreciative of it. Skadoosh and elbow drop, and he says, let's do it. I'm down to get the Pop Culture Cosmos guy.
Nice.
We'll see. One day we will. Maybe one day.
Goodness. The whole crew of us should do it.
Yes. If all of us do it, I don't think anyone would get mad about that. Yes. Yep. If all of us did it, that would be something. If Josh, you, TJ, Jamie, and I did it, There you go. No one, don't Mark Ruffalo it. Don't yeah. Mark Ruffalo it. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm afraid of needles. Don't you play the Hulk?
Right. Right. That would be yeah. funny if one of the Hulk's Achilles heels was getting, you know, a vaccination, a needle.
In real life, yes.
So absolutely. Funny.
Yes, yeah. absolutely indeed. DJ says he needs his tent tat. So, yes, if we all decide to do it, absolutely. I wouldn't mind doing it just somewhere.
Yeah.
Go from there. But, yes, only if we all go in. But it is the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross. She will give you an update before the end of the show on what she's been doing and what she's up and around doing in the world of RPG. But today we've got a lot of things to talk about. It is one of our favorite shows of the year is Oscar predictions time. So absolutely looking forward to hearing her thoughts on who will take home that beautiful gold statue. We'll go ahead and see who's going to take it home this weekend. DJ says, I get the pop culture guy with Game Source on his visor. Oh my God. Course. There you go, my friend. Absolutely. There you go. That would be going old school indeed. Getting the Pop Culture Cosmos guy with the Game Source on his visor. Absolutely. There you go. But it is the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is the PCC Multiverse. Thanks so much for joining us this weekend, though, Melinda. Not only do we have the Oscars on Sunday night, we Hulk doesn't do stairs or needles.
Well played, sir. Well yes, played.
Well played, indeed. Good job, Jamie. Get back on the show, my friend, whenever you can. But it is the PCC Multiverse this weekend, Melinda. As far as outside of the Oscars, there's a battle that's taking place here domestically at the box office. Dune Part 2, an incredible experience. Josh and I are hoping today to record later on, because today he says he's seeing it.
Nice.
And that is Dune Part 2. We're hopefully going to be able to do a spoiler cast that I can go ahead and put on the Monday show. And I'm looking forward to doing that. But it is Dune Part 2 in its second week. How much will it hold over? How much will the fantastic reviews, the incredible word of mouth, hold over until next weekend? In regards to this, will it be able to hold off the debuting Kung Fu Panda 4? And I never want to just basically sidestep any family-friendly animated short, animated video, or animated movie. In this case, it's Kung Fu Panda 4, Melinda. It does have a history of $500 and $600 million box office global hits. And here it comes right back at you again. Your thoughts on Kung Fu Panda 4? It's got off to 3.5 million in previews, looking, projecting right around where Dune Part 2 is, around 40 to 50 million at the domestically at the box office. Your thoughts this weekend at the box office?
I think that I think it's going to be very close, but I do think that Dune is going to stay just a little bit ahead of it. I think that you know, the Kung Fu Panda stuff, I mean, they're very good movies. They always make me laugh. And, you know, Jack Black in all of his amazing over-the-top antics are always great in those movies. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to downplay Kung Fu Panda at all. But I just think that Dune is going to stay kind of on top of it. My plan, fingers crossed, is to go next weekend. That's where I'm at right now. And I have even started to enlist friends to make sure that I leave the house next weekend to go to the movies. So
are you going to go regular XD or what is recommended, IMAX? Because I saw an XD in the tremendous sound system, which truly benefited the scene, and the screen is actually large and extended, but not full IMAX. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to go and see an IMAX version of it just to compare. But yes, the experience in itself was fantastic.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about like the really big IMAX theaters that are down here. I think there's one at the town square or something that yes. they've been talking about. So,
or actually, the IMAX theaters in Las Vegas are the Sunset Stations and the Palms.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so That's kind of what we've been talking
about. Not that I've
done
any research on it in the last 7 days, right?
Yeah, I certainly don't take your word for, you know, any of that kind of stuff.
Not that I looked it up on IMAX.com or anything like that.
No. Why would you? But no, so that is certainly in my future. And like for me, I guess I don't have kids, so I wouldn't go to the theater to see an animated movie. That's a lie. I did that to see Shrek by myself in a theater full of children. And it was a lot of fun. I was the only one laughing at the adult jokes, though. So anyway, focus, Melinda. We're doing this today. For Kung Fu Panda, it's not one that I'm, you know, chewing at the bit to get into the theaters to go see it. Dune is going to do that for me, hopefully next weekend. And I think that there are a lot of people who are also in that boat. It's a question of, I think folks are really unusually busy right now. And I'm not sure why that is, but it's definitely kind of an impression that I get just talking among, you know, my friend circle and then like people who are just outside of that friend circle. It just seems like everybody is really very busy. Or they're trying to avoid me, which is also possible.
No comment. But if I do comment, I would say your husband probably tell you better than anyone else. And if he's not, oh, I'm sorry. Was I ignoring you, honey? If that's what he says, then you know it's an issue.
Then I'm in trouble. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But it is Kung Fu Panda 4 arrives along with other films. But I think Kung Fu Panda 4 is the one that really people are going to go on, get and go see. Imaginary, that is a... I guess a horror movie from Blumhouse, the latest low budget horror flick. They're trying to see if they could connect with the audience, but it truly doesn't look like it's going to be able to do so in a crowded field with Dune and also as well Kung Fu Panda. So we'll see what happens, but it is, of course, Dune Part 2. I think that a lot is riding on it to continue to have legs. I do not see it getting $950 million or thereabouts that Oppenheimer did. But if it can generate $800 million, I think that for me is the sign right there. If it does $800 million, I think that for me is it just from the type of movie it is. It is skewing older. It is not skewing a younger demographic as much. I think that's a big win. I think that's getting the people out there that it needed to get out there, because older individuals, demographics have not been going to the movies as much in this decade because of what's gone on with coronavirus. They've been, I know demographics about 35 and older have been slow to get back to the movies. And Dune Part 2, if it does over $800 million, that's one of the major reasons why, is because it will get a certain demographic of individuals that weren't going to the theaters back to going to the theaters.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's going to take a lot to start to crowbar people back out of their houses post-pandemic, I think.
That's true. And I'm looking forward to seeing, and it was again on IMAX this time around, and hearing your thoughts. But I want to hear your thoughts out there. Are you going to go ahead and check out Dune Part 2 if you haven't already? It, to me, again, if you didn't hit my initial thoughts, non-spoilerish, it was on the Monday show, said it was fantastic. It is a must-see. Absolutely, really worth your time in the best theater possible that you can see it in. There are some sequences that are just blow you away in this movie. So definitely go ahead and check it out and let me know your thoughts. Hopefully, again, if Josh sees it and if you see it, Melinda, I'd love to have some spoilerish talk on Dune Part 2 with you both.
Yeah,
hopefully
absolutely.
We can. It is, of course, Dune Part 2 against Kung Fu Panda 4. Please let us know your thoughts if you're going to go ahead and check out a movie this weekend and what movie it is. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Well, Well, my friend, before we get to the Oscars, want to go ahead and take care of some things as far as some, I guess, some up-to-date news of what's going on in around the world of entertainment. In the world of video games, the major release this week is WWE 2K24, a game that in this decade, as Jamie, our good friend out there, we would tell you as a guy that follows it very closely, has had its ups and downs in recent years. I still think that a game like WWE 2K24 would so much more benefit from being a game that's not released every single year, that's not iterized in full every single year. Just bring out one edition and then come out, just keep on fine-tuning it with updates, providing content constantly. That new thing that everything is going to, as far as a live service game, make it something like that experience, as opposed to just like Madden, just, you know, shoehorning something, you know, in there, and it, but basically the same thing over and over each and every year. Now, this year has gotten favorable reviews for the most part. It's right now at 82 on Metacritic, but I really think that in a world where live service games are being done to death, that a wrestling game like the WWE 2K games would better service themselves, to use the pun, if they went to a one-time edition, then continue just updates for 2, 3, 4, 5 years before you decide to do another one.
Sure. So you'd be looking at like a 3 to 5 year complete revamp, new edition. But yes, in between that time, you've got a little bit of, you know, like downloadable content updates and things like that. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And it also, I think it would take the pressure off of a lot of those developers.
Yeah. It's just the cycle. I mean, yeah, they're used to the cycle now, but it's always a rush job for them. Always a rush job to do within that year span, like Madden, like all these other sports games or sports related games, that they have to do it on a yearly basis. It's just hard to produce something continuously at a quality level that you're doing on a yearly basis, as opposed to making one huge game, then providing content for it and updates for it for a 3 to 7 year period before you create another in the sequence, as far as it's concerned. Now, it doesn't always work. I mean, the Justice League just came out. That fell flat as far as a live service game. And I understand all these developers and publishers are getting into live service. It's the thing right now. It's the trend that they want to do. They want that continuous line of money. I get that. But there, in some cases, I just think it organically fits better to some type of games. And I think that the WWE or a wrestling game per se would better be suited than just regurgitating a whole complete new game or new game, even though the base model is still usually the same year in, year out.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense, but there must be a reason why they've decided to do it this way. Is it just for the sake of consistency, maybe?
The sake of consistency, yes. But since it's 2K and DGen says, but wouldn't that also bring huge microtransactions to recoup losing in between? Yes, it would. There's no two ways about it. It absolutely would. But it, for me, I think in a world of wrestling, if you have enough wrestlers, if let's say your roster of wrestlers you go to is 5 to 750 wrestlers, you could constantly feed new individuals to the mix on a weekly or monthly basis that keeps it fresh. Just like a wrestling federation back in the territory days used to keep things fresh by bringing in new individuals every month, as far as, you know, whatever open door policy that they had. So there's two ways to look at it. Let's say you don't want to buy wrestlers, new wrestlers that come in, don't. But if you do want things to shake things up, at an extra $2 to $3 cost here for bringing in new wrestlers, new match types, things of that nature, go ahead and do so. Add that in just to keep things fresh, as opposed to just trying to having them spend $70 each and every year just to get an update. It just seems, back in the day, like back in the, you know, I guess the early 2000s, there were some games that would just update you with new rosters. Seemingly now you have to get updated with new rosters by buying a whole new game when it comes to sports games.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's going to come down to, you know, priority of profit over content. And, you know, that could really be what the game is all about when it comes to the wrestling 2K games.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's done. It does well. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Enjoying.
But the thing is, it's pretty much AEW Fight Forever aside, but that has really not generated much interest. It is the wrestling game in town because it has the largest entity known to it. So in doing so, it can dictate how it wants to. And 2K has always been very adamant on its microtransactions. And since the trend is going live service, and I know in about a year or two, Melinda, you're going to vomit and say you hate and can't stand live service games. I get that. I know that trend is coming. I know that day is coming because for me, it's almost here already. I just think for a game like Madden,
yeah,
or like WWE, instead of just regurgitating a new edition, supposedly, it is just, I just think it would be better if you put a base model and just add in what people want. And if they don't want it, don't add that in. And there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to require a shift in all of those sports games, really. I mean, soccer, the NHL, NFL, basketball, like all of that stuff, I think would have to all agree. I'm saying the word agree. I just mean catch on to, you know, delivering the same kind of thing. Because let's just say, well, no, I guess if you play hockey games, then you play hockey games. If you play basketball games, then you probably just play basketball games. Yeah. I don't know how much crossover there is in the sports video game.
Well, see, that's the thing, though, with the sports video games. You know, I know Jamie said SmackDown versus Raw, it was an amazing series. You need to go back to that. Or WWE's No Mercy, that everybody's looking for, since that has always been thought of by many as the quintessential wrestling game. It's No Mercy from the 90s. You know, and they, oh man, we need to go ahead back to that. And it's like, the problem is you can't remake those games like you can a Final Fantasy, like, you know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has just, you know, been doing so well since it's come out. The reason why is because you can't get all these wrestlers that were once committed to that version to sign over again. It's all about, you know, as far as rights issues and licensing and things of that nature. Those are, in fact, I remember a conversation I had with Arcade 1UP at CES a few years back, the original year that they are coming out, as far as they had just had her first year's real success, doing well at Walmart, et cetera, et cetera. And I won't say I asked who behind the scenes, but I asked an individual that's high up in the organization behind the scenes about doing a WWE and Nintendo, you know, as far as that's concerned. I was thinking Nintendo, but I did ask him about WWE, and he stated, this individual just stated that it was because of licensing. It's just so hard to bring back the old wrestling games of the past. So when it comes down to it, it's just, I think it's going to be something that we're going to see continuing with these sports games, with these WWE games. But I sure would love to see a point where they just stop, bring out a version that they're happy with and just build upon it from there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a fantastic wish, but money talks, as we've learned, and dropping a new game every year forces that $70 out of your pocket. So.
Yeah. Cause they do have, they do. Yeah. It's the safe money there. It's the safe way to go. But as live service becomes more of a thing, that's the thing. It becomes more of the thing, and it will become more of a thing. A lot of people will get more into it. A lot of companies are getting into it. A lot of development studios are getting into it. It's something that they may want to consider more strongly, even though, again, live service will be done to the point where I think we will not be very appreciative of it going forward. It's a delicate balance. The thing is, if you do too many live service games, what happens to single player experiences? What happens to other experiences that you had before? It's going to be, why is it always just a live service game? Because people The word live service for now means something interesting and interactive continuously. Down the road, live service may become a bad word in the industry to gamers every time out.
Right. And we have seen it happen where gamers have pushed back and studios had to correct course pretty quickly in order to, you know, keep the wallets open, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see, my friend. It is, of course, WWE 2K24. It has released. Want to hear your thoughts out there on WWE 2K4, if it's something you're getting. It is getting strong reviews, 80 to 82. I still don't like, as far as, and I don't know if DGen plays WWE 2K games. I still don't like the card aspects of it, but again, it's leading to the microtransactions of it all. Yeah. And certain other aspects. Can it just be a wrestling game and just wrestle? I don't need no cards send it to me as far as this, you know, oh yeah, it does this power up or this power up or that. Just get in the ring and let's wrestle.
Let me smash some buttons when I go to Gerald's house. That's all I want.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Just like the days of old. But it is, of course, WWE 2K24. Please let us know your thoughts on if you are getting WWE 2K24. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But before we head to the break, I will ask you this. Have you heard of a game called Balatro?
I have not. Tell me more.
Balatro is a game that's going to, you know, Helldivers 2 is a surprise as far as how well it's done.
Right.
You know, that's, everybody has been just, oh my gosh, all across the board. People have been just so excited to see what's going on with of course Helldivers 2. Pal World initially got a lot of people in an uproar over it, how well it was done. These surprise games, these surprise hits have really done well over the past couple months here in 2024. But Balatro, a card-based RPG type game, not truly an adventure, but it's not poker per se, but it's a poker RPG card adventure. I'll probably say something like that.
I'm intrigued.
It is. It's got roguelike features. It's absolutely looking like it's a fun style game. And I know initially for anyone out there that's not into card games like me, it'd probably be something like, I just want to avoid, but the poker aspect of it brings a nuance, something that's old, into a new environment. And it is getting tremendous reviews. It is called Balatro, B-A-L-A-T-R-O. If you're interested and intrigued, it is out there. It's reviewed on several platforms from, you know, Xbox, PC, PS, PlayStation Store, Nintendo. It's something where it's not intensive on graphics, so it's easily something very transformable on all these platforms. But the fact is that, I don't know, this could be the solitaire of this generation, my friend.
Well, say less. Where's my debit card? Let me log on to my PlayStation.
There you go. We'll give it a shot.
Seriously, though, it sounds really interesting, and it sounds like a bit of a fresh take on those adventuring games, which I love. Please don't get me wrong. They are very close to my heart. But, you know, when you have five of the same kind of titles sort of sitting in your library and you're debating over whether or not you want to play the rogue with the purple hair versus the barbarian with the blue hair, I mean, that kind of dictates to me which game I'm going to play.
Yeah, well, absolutely. If you want to give it a try, it is Balatro. It is something I think that a lot of people are getting addicted to because it is reminding a lot of people as far as how people were getting into Solitaire when it was just the add-on for every PC. And I believe it still is.
Yeah,
that you get out there. So if you're intrigued, go check out Balatro on YouTube as far as a game or two from there and see if it's something that you might like. Go check it out. It is Balatro. It is available right now on all platforms, but please let us know your thoughts on Balatro, PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
I'll tell you what, my friend, it is great to have you here. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross. She is doing so many amazing things out there, along with me, Gerald Glassford. I'm just, yeah, on the air every now and then when I can. All seemingly every day, actually. But go ahead and check us out when we're on the air. But Melinda, speaking of on the air, when you terrorize your husband every week, plus do your own thing, please let us know what you're up to in the world of Melinda when it concerns your RPGs.
Well, when it comes to Vampires and Vitae, right now we're still working on fulfilling our end of the bargain between Benoit, who is Alistair's sire, if you've caught that that little arc that we've done, which was so good. Anyway, we're still working on fulfilling our promise to Benoit, which is my character Rose marrying one of her girls off to Benoit to send him up north to Reno so we can kind of establish a very close alliance because we are an anarch town and Benoit is very much Camarilla. So he... In order for him to stay quiet about where we are and what we're up to, that's kind of the deal that we've struck. So we are knee deep in wedding planning. We've had the hen's night and all of that kind of stuff. So very soon we're going to have Rose turn Philippa, you know, the embrace is what it's called when we are playing vampire. So she's going to turn one of her girls into the vampire and then send her off to Benoit. And hopefully Rose's, little devious plan works. What she's doing is she's planting an idea in the Philippa is the character's name in her head. And once she gets up to Benoit and they try to establish the blood bond, what it's going to do is it's actually going to bond Benoit to Rose. So that's the game of vampire, really. It's all about maneuvering and how quickly and quietly you can make something happen that works in your favor versus the person, your opponent that you're playing in the scene against. So we're going to see how that goes. That's going to happen probably here. If not this week, then we'll get to the nitty gritty of it next week. So that's where that story stands right now. For Wizards and Wine in the Shadows of Larkovnia, we are officially inside the walls of Larkovnia now. So a lot more of the intrigue and very subtle things are starting to happen. We just played through a little bit of a cat game to allow the players to kind of get a feeling for the city. There's definitely some interesting stuff that they learned. We just played a session last night, so that's going to come out here in the next couple of weeks. But that's where both of the campaigns stand right now. Shadows of Larkovnia just about to get into the meat and potatoes of the campaign, and Vampires and Vitae just chugging along, and we're going to see if Rose's plan to, I don't want to say screw over Benoit, but I'm going to say screw over Benoit. We'll see how it goes.
And where can everyone find all that it is when it comes to Melinda's RPGs?
We are on all of the podcast platforms. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Amazon. We're on Audible. We're everywhere. All you got to do is just type in Vampires and Vitae. You want the hand-drawn logo, red lips, blue lettering. And for Wizards and Wine, you just search Wizards and Wine and you'll find us. That logo that you're looking for has a pink D20 and like a little pinup girl suggestively drinking a glass of wine as she leans over the D20. So those are the two logos that you're looking for if you're searching for the podcast.
All right. So go ahead and check it out today. All the great stuff that Melinda is doing, please go ahead and support her wherever you can, starting with Vampires and Vitae, Wild Beyond the Witchlight, everything that she's doing. Just, I'll tell you what, you have got a full plate, and I'm so glad that you still find time to go ahead and check us out here at the Pop Culture Cosmos as well. But it is, of course, the PCC Multiverse. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching, listening. Truly appreciate it. It is time with this Sunday's 15-hour-long Oscars that are coming. Good luck if you're going to sit through it all. because I'm not. I'll tell you that right now. I will not put myself through that. I barely put myself through 7-hour pay-per-views. How can I put myself through a 15-hour Oscar? But
the ideas for drinking games when you're watching the Oscars are really through the roof. Take a shot every time the music plays before the thank you speech is over. Take a shot for every time the person who should have won in the category didn't win. Gosh darn it. You know, all that kind of stuff. So you can make a game of it over the 15 hours.
You can.
You might end up in the ER, but.
This is true. This is true. I know on the Lakers Fast Break, our audience keeps wanting one of my co-hosts, Joe Soro, to keep on drinking and actually incentivizes him to do so.
Oh.
I really think that they are going to put him into alcoholism, and I'm just so worried about that constantly. But again, if you want to see that, just go ahead and check out the Lakers Fast Break. But it is the Oscar nominations. And again, I will be getting the updates on it, but I will not be actually watching it, to be honest with you, but I will be getting the updates next week. Hopefully you and I will be able to comment on that as far as it's concerned, because Josh and I will be doing a spoiler cast of Dune Part 2, at least our part. And then hopefully when you watch it, you and I will be also doing our spoilers thoughts on that as well. But when it comes right down to it, my friend, it is the Oscars. The nominations have been out. It is this weekend. I want to hear your thoughts. We'll start off with which category do you want to start off with first? Where do you want to lean first when it comes to
international feature film? I'm just kidding. Makeup and hairstyling.
That one I think is an easy one. Okay. Yeah. International film. I'll start off with that one. International film, because of the fact that Anatomy of a Fall, which a lot of people have really, really talked well about, that one, for some strange reason, was not presented as their France's film. France decided to go ahead and just totally diss it. So here you have the nominees are Yao Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, The Teacher's Lounge, and The Zone of Interest. Zone of Interest is from the UK. And if you've out there as far as in the film world know about The Zone of Interest, you know that film has done really well with the critics. That film, for very haunting reasons, is been very well thought of. It actually is a Best Picture nominee. So yeah, absolutely. I'd probably say that would do it right there. That would be my call as far as The Zone of Interest getting international feature film without Anatomy of the Fall in the mix, which is also a Best Picture nominee. But again, France decided to go ahead and diss it for some reason.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? I'm not sure what it is. I don't know if it's just a fresh, take on storytelling when it comes to film and television. But right now, I cannot get enough of the stuff coming out of Japan. It's so good. And they're telling these really amazing stories that are unpredictable. And I'm really enjoying everything that's coming out of Japan right now. So I don't know that Perfect Days is the answer, but, you know, I'd have a hard time picking something that is not that.
Well, with Godzilla Plus One and also as well, The Boy and the Heron, dominating in not only in Japan, but also doing very well overseas here in the States. I can't say I blame you and all the great things that have come out there. And of course, Demon Slayer, I just went to go see this past week with my daughter as far as catching up with that. So I definitely think that you're right on that. But I do think that the Zone of Interest, which has garnered a lot of interest and dealing with a very, very horrific subject of the Holocaust, but not looking at it directly. The Zone of Interest, if you're not familiar, is a film that's made that the idea is that it's, I guess, the one of the leaders of this concentration camp about him and his family's lifestyle living right across from the camp or right next to the camp. So you're always hearing what's going on, and the horrors and the sound of this is just very horrific. As far as you're being constantly reminded throughout the film, even though this family's just trying to go through their own lives, as far as this, a very intriguing way to look at it, and but still reminding you of the horrors of the Holocaust. So yeah, absolutely, just been a very compelling film for many, and I think that's going to be, in my opinion, the international film of the Oscars. But let's get started with the way that the Oscars are lining this up here on their webpage. So with actor in a leading role, then Bradley Cooper for Maestro and His Nose, which again was very controversial at the time.
It was very controversial, yeah.
I thought it was a good performance. Colman Domingo, who I'm happy for the rise in Colman Domingo, because, you know, he was doing various acting gigs, including Fear of the Walking Dead, for years, and to see him break out in this role plus others as well, and seeing him reap on that success, I'm very happy for him. It is well deserved. This is for Rustin that he's nominated for, but yes, he is. There's a Colman Domingo right now is a hot name in the industry, and it is well deserved. Paul Giamatti returning to Oscars with The Holdovers and a very good performance. Of course, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, as he plays obviously the gentleman that the whole movie centers itself around. And Jeffrey Wright, fantastic actor, love his narrations. He really makes the What If Marvel What If series, especially season two, very enjoyable. Season one, he was the one of the best things about it too as well. American Fiction is the movie he's nominated for. So tell me your thoughts, actor in a leading role.
As much as my heart wants to pick Paul Giamatti, because I adore him, I do think it's going to go to Cillian Murphy. I think that he's, I think he's going to walk away with it.
Now, you and I talked about this before we went on the air, and I interrupted you with the actual start of the show, and I apologize for that.
Oh, no, you're fine.
I said that I have a feeling that Oscar likes to do this, where they just jump on a movie and just follow it through, making sure one movie gets several wins. It's more uncommon than common these days that they spread the love for several films. I mean, we saw last year with Everything Everywhere All at Once, which tremendous movie on my top 25 of all time. Of course, I don't mind getting it, but it got a predominant amount of awards. So your thoughts on this? So do you see, getting into what we're going to be talking about here, a spreading of the love, or just reaping the praise upon one's particular film?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. It's just going to be a deluge of, you know, awards going to one movie. And I think there's going to be like a little bit of flavoring here and there just to say, yeah, but we gave that Oscar to that movie instead. I mean, we could have, but we didn't. You know, I think that there's going to be a little bit of that happening. Like, there may be another movie that gets maybe two or three Oscars compared to, you know, the main movie that's going to get like eight or nine. That's how I see it kind of shaking out again this year. I mean, it's gotten to the point where the Oscars aren't that predictable. And I think that's why people are not watching anymore. It's just not, it's not interesting. As soon as you see the first category movie win, you're like, oh, okay, well, that's set up for the rest of the show. Spoilers, I guess we're done here.
Actor in a supporting role. Sterling K. Brown, excellent actor. Absolutely happy for him as well in American Fiction. Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, the old standby himself. Robert Downey Jr., RDJ for Oppenheimer. Ryan Gosling, Barbie. Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. Now, Mark Ruffalo was the early leader in the clubhouse, but RDJ, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, has gotten so much tremendous momentum, earning all the awards. I don't know if it's for Oppenheimer or if it's his, for the previous work, as far as, oh, he should get it for, he should have gotten for something for Iron Man. It didn't. So let's go ahead and award him.
Right. Correct, past mistakes. Yeah.
I thought it was a very good performance. I thought there were other performances. Oppenheimer is a supporting role that were just as good as his. Aiden Eidenreich aka Solo, the guy. I thought he was outstanding in the film, especially the turn that happens later, where he think he's a naive individual being schooled by RDJ, when in all actuality, he was schooling RDJ all the time. So, I mean, I thought that was a brilliant performance myself, but it is RDJ. I really think the money's on there. Here in Vegas, he's an overwhelming favorite. I think that's going to go down as a win for RDJ. Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things was absolutely wild and debaucherous. And sorry, Mark Ruffalo. I know we've been picking on you hard today with the
we have been for some reason.
Yes. So, but no love for the Hulk. I think it's going to be Iron Man getting the Oscar this time around.
I think this is the category that's going to surprise people, and I think it's going to go to De Niro.
Really?
I do. Yeah. I think this is
going to. How about Ryan Gosling for I Am Ken? You know, just.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I know he's performing the song, and what a great way to tie everything together to have, you know, the guy who's performing. Yeah, to actually walk away with the supporting role Oscar as well. But I don't think it's going to go to Ryan. I just don't see that happening. I think really the race is between Ruffalo, Downey Jr. and De Niro, honestly.
So you're picking De Niro.
I'm picking De Niro. I think so. I think that there are enough voters in the Academy that see the name De Niro and go, well, it's going to be that guy. Honestly, I really do think.
If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games.
Actress in a leading role: Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, Emma Stone for Poor Things.
I think it's going to be Mulligan.
Really?
I do, yeah.
I thought she was outstanding, Maestro. Maestro was a good film, not a great film to me. I mentioned that on her Best Of.
Yeah.
I thought Bradley Cooper's performance was great. It was very, very good, I should say. But it was Carey Mulligan that carried that picture. She is absolutely fantastic. D-Gen says Emma Stone, he thinks, for Poor Things. And she was fantastic as you know, this her performance. But I think Lily Gladstone, I think right now it's been in the award season, like 60-40, Lily Gladstone to Emma Stone on getting the postseason award, awards, I should say, as they call it. I really think that Lily Gladstone, I think the Academy wants to send a message.
Right.
And, definitely wants to go ahead and reward her. So if any movie from Killers of the Flower Moon for me will get an award, I think it will be that one. But your thoughts again on who is going to win?
I think it's going to go Mulligan.
Oh, you're going to think it's going to go Mulligan. Okay.
Yeah.
It's certainly well-deserved. She was fantastic in that film. And definitely recommend you heading over to Netflix to check it out. Actress in the supporting role: Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrara for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Now, as someone who is a Superstore nut and a fanatic that I am of that show, I would love to see America Ferrara win. She was fantastic in Barbie, especially with that monologue she was given.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If it given in the hands of an actor who's maybe not as prepared or is not as good, could have really been over dramatic and done incorrectly, but she killed it. She knocked it out of the park and did an amazing job with it and made it to where everybody was crying by the end of her monologue.
Right.
But I really think that you cannot deny the fact that Divine Joy Randolph has been winning all the awards and that her performance in the holdovers is definitely deserving. I think it's Divine Joy Randolph's to win.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one. There's a piece of me that's leaning a little bit towards Danielle Brooks with The Color Purple, but there's been so much like controversy that surrounded that film that I don't know that the Academy is going to truly support it just for that reason. I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, but that's kind of my feeling on that.
Absolutely. Dylan, yes, I did see Dune Part 2. I did mention earlier in the show my thoughts on it, but I did do a non-spoiler review of it. I plan to do a spoiler cast review of it when both Melinda and Josh, my co-hosts, go ahead and check it out. Maybe Josh will be able to see it and be able to talk about it later today. But I do put my non-spoiler review thoughts here. It's on the actual channel for the Pop Culture Cosmos on YouTube. And it's actually Monday's show, so check it out. It's right there for you. But yes, great thoughts right there, my friend. Next on the list, animated feature film. The Boy and the Heron, which we were just talking about. Elemental, Nimona, which if you didn't get to check out, you should, on Netflix. Robot Dreams and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I would love to say Miyazaki in what... Oh, he said this was his last. He said the last one was his last one. He said this one was his last one. So we'll see if it's actually his last one. But yeah, if it is his last one, I would love to see the upset in this. But Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I go back and forth which Spider-Man I love across, which Spider-Verse movie I love more, the first one or the second one. I actually watched the first one recently. Again, in a theater, watch it at the Smith Center with orchestra and a DJ. And it was absolutely magnificent watching it in that platform. So yeah, I go back and forth, but Across the Spider-Verse was no less a great experience for me. I know the money's on Spider-Verse, but man, I really want to call the upset for Boy and the Heron. I think I'm going to call the upset for Boy and the Heron.
You call the upset. I'll stay with the expected winner. I'll stick with Spider-Man. That way we're covered.
Okay, fair enough. I just think Miyazaki, the Academy will want to reward Miyazaki at some point in time. They may give him an honorary Oscar a couple years down the line, just because I think they will. But if they don't, if he doesn't win here, they will. They absolutely will. So I'll leave it at that. I just think that you can't lose either which way, because both are great experiences. Cinematography. Let's go with El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Poor Things was very visual.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Oppenheimer. I think Oppenheimer is, again, which we talked about, a movie getting the bulk of the awards. It has to earn them somewhere. It has to get them somewhere. And I think that here and in sound, even though Zone of Interest I talked about, we'll talk about sound here in a bit, but I really think that Oppenheimer is going to win it here.
Yeah, I think that also makes sense. Although, I mean, I would love to see Poor Things get that one, but I think Oppenheimer, but as you said, needs to collect those awards somewhere. And I think that's going to be the runaway movie of the whole awards show. So I'm with you there.
What about costume design? This is where I think Poor Things can win, but your thoughts: Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. I think if Poor Things wins, it'll be in costume design and makeup. Your thoughts on costume design and makeup? I'm going to throw makeup in there as well. I'm going to think of Poor Things because of like Willem Dafoe's, you know, scars and all that. If you know his main character, the costume design for like Emma Stone, and whatnot. But Barbie could also get a lot of interest as well because, hey, it's Barbie.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if costume design is what you're thinking about, you can't discount Barbie because they paid so much homage to the doll through the years, the black and white bathing suit. You know, they hit all of those really in the feels nostalgia moments for Barbie and her most iconic outfits that she's had through all of the years. So I think that there's going to be a tip of the hat to Barbie for that one.
Let's go for best director right now. And it does not necessarily mean, although it probably will mean as far as for one and the same, Anatomy of the Fall with Justin Triet, Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer for Christopher Nolan, Poor Things for Yorgos Lanthimos, The Zone of Interest for Jonathan Glazer. I told you about Anatomy of Fall. I still don't understand why France, you know, that's so weird how they didn't put that film out there for best international film, yet it gets all these nominations. But okay,
yeah,
it's Oppenheimer's, Christopher Nolan's to lose.
Yeah, I think so as well. You know, much like seeing De Niro on a ballot and not checking the name would feel wrong, I think that there's people out there who feel the same way about Scorsese. But I do hope that Christopher Nolan gets this one.
Let's go with best original song. It is The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot. Actually, it was a very well-received film, if you get a chance to check it out. I'm Just Ken from Barbie. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. Wahazahi from Killers of the Flower Moon. I was hoping I said that correctly. And What Was I Made For by Barbie. I, like many others, think the Dua Lipa song was the best song from Barbie. But yeah, I'm going to go I'm Just Ken. So for what was here.
You're going to go with I'm Just Ken. Okay, well, I'll pick the other Barbie nomination. What was I Made For? Okay. Having Billie Eilish attached to it, I think, is always adding some weight to that.
And the slow song ballads, they always get love. Yeah,
they love that stuff.
Right. You might be right.
It's all catnip. Right.
All right, it's catnip. All right, my friend. That leads us, actually, let's go a couple more before we get to Best Picture. Special effects. I'm going to go ahead down here. Special effects, visual effects, The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Napoleon. I thought Napoleon was a surprise. I thought Dead Reckoning was a surprise because you don't really think of them. I might go with the upset. I might go with Godzilla Minus One simply because it was made on such a minuscule budget to do what they did.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think that we're gonna see the nod to Godzilla for this one. Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. I can't agree with you more on this. This is the prequel to what's gonna happen next year when Dune Part 2 takes that award. I'm just gonna say that out loud. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
You sure did. I heard it. No take backsies.
Ed just gotta see. You gotta see the movie, Melinda. Absolutely has to see the movie. And hopefully
agree 1,000%.
Best sound, The Creator. And by the way, check out The Creator. I think it's a really underrated movie. I know it was put out at a bad time of the year and didn't get a lot of love, but go ahead and check out The Creator if you can. Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. Of course, Oppenheimer. Again, it's going to win a lot of these technical awards, I think.
Yeah, I agree too. Because I mean, never mind. I'm thinking of Dune 2. I had watched an interview with Denis Villeneuve and he was talking about how the technical things that they did in the first movie allowed him to push it even further in the second film. So I think a lot of this technical stuff is going to go to Dune next year
which won a lot of awards and lost a lot of Oscars the first time around. So there you go. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So Best Picture, here we go. And of course, Best Picture of that year should have been Dune Part 1. But I don't. That's old salt and wounds on that one. But Best Picture, here we go. It's here. American Fiction, Anatomy of the Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives. Past Lives, I think, is really underrated. I think people should go out of their way to go see that one. Greta Lee is fantastic in that film. Poor Things and The Zone of Interest. There's no slouch here. There's no, this movie doesn't belong. I think the movie that's going to win is Oppenheimer.
I think if it's not Oppenheimer, it's going to be Killers of the Flower Moon.
Really?
Okay. I do. Yep.
Okay. But it is, of course, our thoughts on the Oscars. What are your thoughts on the Oscars? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos at Yahoo.com. So for Melinda Barkhouse Ross, it's Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching and listening. It's a beautiful day in paradise right here in the PCC multiverse. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.